Live from the mist-enshrouded mountaintop fortress that is X and Y Communications Headquarters, you're listening to the world-famous Mountaintop Podcast. And now, here's your host, Scott McKay.
Hello, hello once again, and welcome to the world-famous Mountaintop Podcast. I'm your host, Scott McKay, at Scott McKay on Twitter, Real Scott McKay on Instagram, Scott McKay on YouTube. You can find us on the web at www.mountaintoppodcast.com, and you can join our ever-growing, increasing Facebook group at Mountaintop Summit on Facebook. Today, we're going to shift gears just a little bit and go into a topic that has been driven by lots of you guys who I've been working with over the years. And the topic today is, in the broader sense, asexuality. But as you're going to find out, if this isn't something you've dabbled much in as a topic over the course of your years on this big, beautiful blue planet of ours, there are lots of shades of gray that can be assigned under that common umbrella, if you will, of asexuality. So what I decided to do was go get the world expert on this subject. And I got to tell you, I'm really excited because I think I succeeded wildly at that. My guest co-host name is Tony Bogart, and he is the professor of health sciences and psychology at Brock University, which is rather near Niagara Falls in Canada, in St. Catharines. Welcome, Tony. It's good to have you on board.
Thank you. Thanks for having me, Scott.
Yeah, indeed. I Googled the subject of asexuality in general, and your name just kept coming up again and again. What's your background on the subject of asexuality, and what caused you to take such an interest in studying
it? Well, yeah, that's a good question. You know, I was doing research on traditional sexual orientation. So what makes a person gay? What makes a person straight? What makes a person bi? And I was working in that field, and I ended up doing some research using an existing database. And in that existing database, there was a question that asked people who they were sexually attracted to. And usually you get a response, let's say a 7-point scale, on one end primarily men, on the other end primarily women. And this particular database actually had an interesting alternative. It basically not only gave that option to people, but it also actually gave the option of saying, you know what, I've never felt attracted to anyone at all. And it started to kind of make me think a little bit that, wait a minute, these people are asexual. These people have had an enduring lack of sexual attraction to no one. And so I thought, well, this is an interesting area of research that really hasn't been studied very much. And so I ended up doing a study in 2002, 2003. It ultimately was published in the Journal of Sex Research in 2004. And that started me thinking a little bit more about the subject matter and made me continue to do work in that area. Ultimately, I wrote a book on it a while ago as well. And then it stimulated other researchers and other healthcare workers to start to think a little bit about the whole subject matter of asexuality. And since that time, there's been a fair bit of research and a fair bit of talk on the subject matter of asexuality.
Now, the name of your book is, intuitively enough, Understanding Asexuality, which I'll give a link to on Amazon from my site. And I can't help but think, if you're one of the pioneers in research on this subject, and it was 2002, 2003, when you really started getting your feet wet in this, man, a lot of people must have been left in the lurch with these feelings or lack thereof over the course of history, huh?
Yeah, probably prior to some of the work that I've done, it's probably been a subject matter that's been under the radar. So asexual people probably have been not really seen, and it's not really been a visible minority, I would say. And it's probably also the case that many people who are asexual just never felt desired any kind of need for even self-identification. And even if they did have a need for self-identification, there may not have been much knowledge that informed their self-identification as an asexual person.
What percentage of the population, roughly, would you say falls under the heading of some sort of asexuality?
I would say probably the best estimate we have is about 1%. In my 2004 paper that I've already referred to, this was a national sample, so it was representative, or at least as good as you can get at the time, representative of the British population, and about 1% of that particular sample said they had never felt sexual attraction to anyone at all. So I think 1% is a reasonably good working figure, and some of the recent data that's come out beyond that 2004 paper, some higher, some a little lower, but I would still say 1% is a reasonable working figure. It'd be interesting to see in the next, you know, 5 or 10 years when people become more comfortable, perhaps coming out, maybe that figure will come up or will raise up a little higher. And there's some interesting evidence that people's sexual interest in some surveys has gone down over the last 10 years or so. So maybe there's going to be an increase of people who ultimately identify or ultimately say that they lack sexual attraction to other people.
Now, that's an interesting idea. Do you think that may be due to social pressure or perhaps an increasing social ideal that we just don't like the other gender anymore, or that they're just not worth it? Or do you think it has something to do with diet or how we've enculturated ourselves? What do you think that would be attributable to?
You know, it is interesting. I'm not suggesting that the decline in sexuality and interest and desire in sexuality necessarily means there's definitely an increase in asexual people per se. It may be at least partially to do with sexual people becoming a little less inclined overall themselves as well. But yeah, it's an interesting question. What's behind that? Are there social kinds of conditions, maybe dietary things? I think it's probably, I mean, I'm speculating, but it's probably a combination of both social factors and perhaps also some biological, maybe some dietary things. Maybe there are certain chemicals in the air and in products that we eat to some degree that may be mimicking estrogen-like hormones that may be reducing people's sex drive a little bit, perhaps. But I expect there's also social factors that are coming into play. But that's an interesting sort of broader context also to understand this new emerging identity, the ace identity, people who are in fact identifying as asexual as well.
Now, you just use the term ace to identify asexual people, and that's a commonly used shorthand phrase for being asexual, right? The quote,
yes,
unquote ace community.
That's correct. Yeah. Yeah.
Now, when you're talking about asexuality as being 1% of the population, you're including in that figure no more and no less than people who are self-reporting as not feeling any sexual attraction for anybody, correct?
That's correct. And some level of enduring lack of sexual attraction. So it's not just a matter of, you know, the last couple of days I've been tired and, you know, sleepy, and, you know, I haven't been feeling well. Or let's say someone who maybe, you know, is really depressed over the last 3 months or something and has not felt much sexual interest in others. I think there needs to be, in this definition, some level of stability, not necessarily full stability in terms of absolute lifelong. Even, for example, there is some evidence that in other sexual orientation, there may be some level of flexibility, particularly for women, in terms of their orientation. But I think there needs to be some level of enduringness and stability if you want to define asexuality. So I would say, if you want to define asexual people, I would say that they are the people who tend to have an enduring lack of lustful attraction for other people.
So it is, in a sense, a sexual orientation fully in and of itself to be asexual. And, you know, people who are just ace curious, for lack of a better way to put it. Like, for example, I haven't felt much of a need to be attracted to anybody after that brutal breakup I just went through.
Yeah.
Those people wouldn't be asexual in terms of the clinical definition.
Maybe there's others in the scientific community that might define them as, you know, temporary aces or something like that. But I would tend to define asexuality as more of an enduring lack of lustful attraction to other people. So that would be my definition. And yes, within the context of sexual orientation, I think we can understand asexuality within that context. So you can be, for example, attracted to the other sex, heterosexual, straight. You can be attracted to the same sex, gay. You could be attracted to both sexes, bisexual, but you can have a kind of fourth quadrant there, if you will. And those people who are not attracted to others, men or women, can therefore be construed as asexual and also be understood within, at least in my perspective, within a sexual orientation framework.
I'm interested in diving in a little bit into what it feels like, or indeed what it is like psychologically, emotionally, to be asexual. I'm sure a lot of my listeners are wondering about that because they're not necessarily experiencing it themselves, or maybe they are, but they're fascinated by this. So for example, you're saying they are absent of a lustful sexual attraction. So in other words, the idea of a guy seeing a woman and just wanting to get a piece of her with a visceral edge to it. Mm-hmm. Is what's missing from this person's experience. Okay,
yes.
Granted.
Yes.
So how does an ace person experience romance? Do they get romantic feelings?
Yeah, and that's an important distinction. One of the interesting reasons why I'm interested in asexuality is it helps us to inform and allows us to really think deeply about sexuality. And one of the interesting distinctions that is important that's emerged since my work in 2004 and others have confirmed this is that, you know what, asexual people are not necessarily aromantic. That is, they're not necessarily without love feelings for others in a romantic sense. And so what that means as well is that there's a kind of potential decoupling of romantic and sexual feelings that occur or can occur in all of us. And it's certainly true that even in very sexual people, you can have a kind of different and separate feeling associated with romantic feelings. So it may be the case that you may have very lustful feelings for someone, you know, walking down the street and feeling like, wow, would I love to have sex with that person. But you can also have, of course, separate feelings in a kind of romantic way for, let's say, one's spouse, or even for perhaps, you know, a girlfriend, boyfriend that you're just getting to know. Or you can, in fact, have different feelings in terms of romantic connections to one another versus, for example, lustful sexual feelings to others. And so studying asexual people, the fact that asexual people can be aromantic also allows us to understand that romance and sex can be very different even in, for example, sexual people. And that's one of the interesting ideas that have emerged out of some of my work and some of the work that's come after my work.
Now, personally, I've tended to identify romance. The working definition I've used is any experience between two people who would be sexually attracted to each other by orientation that would feel awkward between themselves and someone who they're not sexually attracted to. So in the case of someone who's asexual, this sort of throws a proverbial wrench into that machine. I'm not feeling the urge to have sex with this person, but I'm still getting these warm fuzzies towards someone who's yeah. different than I am in terms of their gender or their polarity. So you can feel the polarity of another person
yes.
drawing you to them and making you want to have a certain kind of relationship with them that you wouldn't have with someone else, but it's just not driven by putting the round peg in the round hole.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's definitely the case that, you know, as sexual people, you can, for example, still have perhaps at least theoretically romantic feelings even towards, you know, let's say the same sex, even if you're heterosexually inclined, sexually speaking. So, for example, a kind of classic example in the movies and in books and popular media is to say things like, well, there's a brewing bromance there.
Exactly. That was the word I was going to bring up.
Yeah. And you know what? I think there is, therefore, separate kinds of feelings and separate origins within the brain, for example, that are linked to romantic feelings, that is sometimes definitely linked to sexual stuff, no question about it. But they can be decoupled enough that they're separate mechanisms and separate kinds of longings, separate kind of emotions, if you will, separate kinds of inclinations, at least to some degree.
I'm thinking maybe more along the lines of what people would generally define as chemistry.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah. Now, I have a question about how asexual people process attractiveness. I'm assuming that someone who's asexual can look at a human being and go, well, that person is theoretically sexually attractive or not. They can understand why this person would be that.
Yes.
Is that correct?
I think, yes. There's never been any systematic research that I know of, except for sort of anecdotal kinds of responses from asexual people suggesting that definitely they can have that recognition that this person is, for example, yeah, I could see that this person is sexually attractive to, let's say, members of the opposite sex or members of the same sex if they're gay. And it's certainly also the case that even little children, for example, can have strong feelings of or sensing, for example, physical attractiveness in others. So little kids can, for example, look at faces of attractive men or attractive women and actually have some preference and lean towards more physically attractive people versus people who are, let's say, more modest in terms of their attractiveness. So there's probably built-in kinds of mechanisms in people that are at least separate from sexual inclinations that can allow us to detect physical attractiveness on some broad level.
You bring up an interesting and I think very intuitive point that we as human beings, regardless of our orientation, understand sexual polarity. We understand that boys are different than girls and we may interact with them differently. And we know who's attractive and who isn't long before we reach puberty.
Yeah.
So even when we are in an asexual or latently sexual stage as young children, we understand these things.
I think so.
So would it be accurate to say, as crass as this is almost going to sound, that asexual people really don't process pubescence and sexual maturity into a mindset where the sex and the hormones kick in that sex drive?
I think that's a reasonable hypothesis model. I think there's elements there that need to be tested, but I think just off the top of my head and just presenting it here and now, I think that does make some sense in terms of, yeah, there's an implicit, inherent level of understanding on some broad level of physical attractiveness. But once puberty kicks in, if you have a special inclination for the other sex or the same sex, then those hormones, for example, in asexual people really don't kick in for a kind of extra level of lustful attraction. So it stays on, let's say, a more abstract level, or at least an emotional level that does not trigger sexual thoughts and sexual luring and sexual feelings in a deep way.
You know, it's fascinating to me how much research in this area is like the Wild West. I mean, there really has been very little done on it so far. I mean, it's wide open.
It is. In many ways, it is. I agree with that.
I mean, would it be a dangerous assumption to say that asexuality could theoretically be quote unquote cured by hormone therapy? I mean, is this a chemical thing or yeah. Is it a psychological thing or is it both or is it neither?
The research that I know of, and it's more, again, based on anecdotal evidence from asexual people, for example, who have gone to physicians or have, for example, gone to clinics, and also some research looking at, you know, just overall testing of people's hormone levels and so on. There's not much evidence that asexual people have lower levels of, let's say, hormones like testosterone, which is important in terms of sex drive. There's not much evidence for that. So in the same way that gay men, for example, don't lack testosterone in terms of circulating hormones during adulthood, asexual people don't lack reasonable adult levels of hormones as well. It's just that there's probably some level of brain mechanism that is stimulated in, let's say, heterosexual or gay people that actually allows for these hormones to provide a fuel. But if, for example, that brain organization is not there in asexual people, regardless of the fuel that you have in your body, that fuel ain't going to work. That fuel ain't going to be something that makes you charge towards other people, because there's a kind of prenatal organization of the brain that's actually giving you your orientation in the first place, or helping to give you that orientation in the first place.
So you've mentioned the idea of asexual people going to the doc and saying, hey, you know, what's going on here? Yeah. In your understanding of people who are experiencing this, do they mind it? Do they have any idea, you know, to put it bluntly, what they're missing out on? And would they like to have that in their life? Or are most people who are asexual pretty comfortable with this and feel almost like, hey, you know, I dodged a bullet because, you know, I don't have to worry about this stuff like other people do?
I think it's a mix. I think on average, though, there's more comfort in asexual people, particularly asexual people who identify as an asexual person. Generally speaking, my experience is that asexual people can be very content with who they are. And I don't think that necessarily asexuality is a disorder that needs fixing. If someone is happy and content with who they are, if they are an asexual person, not interested in having sexual activity with others, then fine, great, okay, cool.
Do some people not realize that they're experiencing asexuality?
I think most people who are asexual, if they've had an enduring lack of sexual attraction, kind of recognize that they're different, but they wouldn't necessarily have given it a label as asexual. And therefore, they may just feel like, well, I'm just a little different in the, you know, romantic sexual sphere, but there's lots of people who are kind of a little different in that sphere anyway. And I think there are people who are still struggling, though, with who they are as individuals and what their comfort level is with relationships and how sexuality fits into any relationships they have. So certainly the case that there are probably some individuals that recognize they have romantic attractions for others and are interested in forming some kinds of bonds with others. And then when perhaps if they're in a romantic relationship or starting a romantic relationship with a partner, there might be pressure on them from the other partner to engage in sexuality. And that makes them start to think a little bit like, wait a minute, I kind of don't really want this, but my partner does. So that may trigger, for example, reflection, thoughts of being different. But I expect many people who are asexual and have an enduring lack of lustful attraction to other people probably have felt a little different all along. And so, you know, when teenage years kind of kick in and all of a sudden everybody is boy crazy or girl crazy or whatever, probably most asexual people feel like they were different when that started to happen in their teenage years. Just like, for example, gay people oftentimes recognize that they were a little different than the heterosexual majority, even from, for example, a pre-pubertal age. And then when puberty hits, they kind of go, you know what? Yeah, I kind of am really different than, you know, the majority of people. Some people share my interests, but generally speaking, most people are kind of different than I am.
Now, two major topics of discussion just sprang forth from what you were discussing there.
Okay.
And I want to handle them separately. So at the risk of maybe diverting the discussion a little bit, we'll take them one at a time. First of all, you mentioned asexual people in the context of a relationship. Clearly, I mean, I'm thinking this is a safe assumption. Of course, you know what happens when you assume. So I'm going to let you go ahead and riff on this. But just because someone is asexual doesn't mean they want to be alone and they don't have a need for companionship. So given the fact that they may not fully comprehend the nature of their sexual orientation relative to other people. They may simply see themselves as a little different, or I don't understand why these people are so horny for each other. It just seems like they don't have any control or something.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just weird to them. They get into a relationship with someone and they figure, okay, well, I guess I'm going to be in a relationship with a woman if I'm in a relationship, because I guess that's what will make my parents happy. It seems like it's heteronormative still in this culture. I mean, you know, that's another tangent we could go on there, is do people who are asexual tend to favor relationships for companionship with someone of same sex or other sex, or is it all over the highway? But that aside, yeah. Let's say they get into that relationship with whom they're going to get in a relationship with, and the other person in that relationship is not asexual.
Mm-hmm.
How is the person who is fully heterosexual or fully homosexual, you know, of a different orientation than the asexual person, going to respond to that relationship? I'm thinking they may not necessarily pick up on the fact that this person is in fact asexual, unless the person who is asexual has enough of a grasp of their own orientation to make that perfectly known. And can such relationships succeed? I mean, is a woman, for example, who has been hurt by sexuality in the past, maybe she's very shy about engaging in sexual activity because of past negative experience, is she perhaps going to welcome that opportunity to be with a man who would not require sex of her at all? And can that be considered a functional relationship in that context? Kind of a big question, right?
Yeah, it is. But it's an important dynamic that might be existing in some relationships. Sure.
Yeah, just kind of understudied, I guess.
Yeah, it is. I would say that I think on average it probably creates some level of tension, some level of concern within relationships, and it may be perhaps the kiss of death. If people are so divergent in terms of their sexual interests within a relationship. But I also think that, you know, there's more than just sex to relationships. And in fact, you know, the relationship between sexuality and happiness in couples is not that strong, really. So I think it can work. I think people who are, for example, sexual may find other outlets, perhaps through masturbation, or maybe they have other partners in terms of moving outside the relationship, but they're very happy and contented with the romantic relationship with the asexual person. So I think it can work, or it may be the case that, you know, the asexual person, at least I'm not that sexually attracted to my partner. In fact, not at all. But, you know, I'll end up engaging in some level of sexual activity to satisfy my partner. And it may be something they don't find absolutely disgusting, and therefore it's not that hard for them to engage in that sexual activity. They may find very little pleasure or very little sexual attraction towards their partner, but may still engage in some level of sexual activity with their partner. So I think it's workable. Again, I don't want to give the impression that asexuality is necessarily the kiss of death in a relationship, even if, for example, that asexual person is connecting to a sexual person. I think it often can create tensions, but I think it is also something that can work at times. And I think the dynamics can occur in a relatively comfortable way if people are relatively flexible. And again, sexuality doesn't have to be the only thing that brings people together in terms of romantic relationships.
I'm hoping you have quick, rapid-fire answers to three things that just came up while we were talking. First of all, is there an outlet for asexual people to find each other if they would just rather not have that complexity?
Yeah, there's certainly websites, for example, where people find one another. Yep.
Do people who are asexual find the idea of sexuality gross? It's like, dude, I mean, there's like mucus involved and semen, and like, you kidding me? I mean, do they see sex typically as a gross thing to do?
Some do, yeah, but not all.
I can understand how they would.
Yeah.
Yeah, because sex is gross.
Well, it's interesting. I mean, and that's one of the interesting elements, too, to why, you know, studying asexuality is interesting from my perspective. In one of my chapters, for example, in my book, I talk about whether or not asexuality is a disorder or not. And then I bring up the idea that, well, if you construe sexuality in a kind of broad way and remove yourself, you know, taking a sort of broad perspective on it, you know, sex is something that creates a lot of tension, can create a lot of problems. And it is,
it's a hassle. And it's gross.
Hassle.
Yeah.
And there's a certain madness to it that we're driven to engage in this kind of activity because of these lustful feelings. And they oftentimes shut down our higher order centers and create a lot of problems in our lives.
Yeah, I mean, apart from horniness, it doesn't make any sense at all to me. I mean, I can see that. I can transparently see how it wouldn't.
Yeah.
My other question for you is, you mentioned something that just sparked fascination in my imagination. You talked about perhaps the non-asexual partner in such a companionship, mm-hmm. going outside the relationship to find sexual pleasure and fulfillment. Mm-hmm. Is this something that an asexual partner would be more open to because perhaps they're missing this link between jealousy and possession and sexuality? Like, sure, you know, you need to get off, find someone to do it with. You know, I'll even watch and take notes. Is that something an asexual person would be more likely to be on board with?
I expect it's possible. I don't think it's ever been studied, but
yeah, another Wild West unknown.
Yeah, subject. Absolutely. I think given that sexuality is this major source of jealousy that we have for our sexual / romantic partners, it'd be interesting to study to what degree that emotion is less strong in asexual people. There might still be a kind of romantic jealousy that makes them want to kind of keep their partner within their own home and whatever. But I expect that the sexual jealousy aspect is much less of importance and relevance to them. So it may be the case that, you know, yeah, they may say, you know what, yeah, go out and enjoy yourself and, you know, be comfortable when you come home, and I know you love me, and I know I love you, and as long as we're open with it, you know, I think that will work, and so on and so forth. So I think that's possible.
I would imagine there's less, say, porn jealousy, but perhaps more confusion and even fear towards the idea of this person forsaking that relationship to go find a sexual relationship, because the asexual person wouldn't understand it. Perhaps they would fear it more. I could see it going both directions.
Yeah.
Fascinating.
It is fascinating. I think it's worthy of studying. And I don't think it's ever really been looked at in any systematic research-based way.
You know what, Tony? As we keep talking about this and digging in more and more, I can't help but start thinking how much hassle asexual people are saving themselves. I mean, I don't blame them one bit for being perfectly happy with their asexuality. And that kind of brings me to that second major thought process that occurred to me from when you were talking before about the subject, haven't forgotten about that. It seems that if an asexual person is a man or woman of faith, it is so much easier to adhere to your moral belief system because sexuality isn't there to corrupt it.
Yeah.
I mean, the vast majority of people of faith I talk to, for them, sex is the linchpin of all their guilt, yeah, all of their shame, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, most Christian folks, for example, can avoid murdering each other, robbing banks. But boy, porn is really super tempting. Mm-hmm. You know, you're 22 years old. You're not married yet. You want to get your rocks off. Getting a little Christian church girl and screwing each other like rabbits in private is not only something that sounds incredibly exciting, it is all the more exciting because it's taboo. So yeah. I have people in my practice all the time who are men and women of faith who are just carrying a tremendous amount of heavy feeling and guilt and shame towards this dark area of their faith where they just don't have any self-control.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, I've had people come to me, many of the people who were in fact the drivers for this discussion, me wanting to cover this subject formally, are people who are men and women of faith who, you know, find it a lot easier to be a Christian or to be whatever faith they're practicing because they're just not tempted by this.
Yeah.
And they may go into priesthood because it just isn't an issue for them.
Yeah.
And it's so much easier, more seamless to be that person.
I agree with that. And talking to some clergy, for example, they also indicate that people going into the priesthood, it is a much easier sort of life for them if they happen to be asexual. Not all of them are, certainly not, but it makes for an easier life if complete abstinence of sex is something that you're very comfortable with. and average typical people of faith who are in relationships, even if you're not in relationships, if your religion is telling you not to be, for example, a sexual person outside of marriage, that's a hard road to travel down. So it makes it understandable that asexuality, if people have that particular part of their life, it may make a religious life a little easier, as long as that religious life is, in fact, prescribing, for example, certain rules about sexuality.
Yeah, to me, it's kind of the very lens that makes it all make sense.
Right? I mean, for many, many people, at times, sexuality is just something that drives them batty and mad. And so within the context of you're trying to figure out, is asexuality a disorder? I think you really need to put into perspective what sexuality does to people before you start saying, whoa, man,
that's even crazier.
Disorder. Well, have you looked at yourself as a sexual person?
Yeah, sexuality is a lot more disorderly than asexuality, so it seems.
Yes, and that is a subject matter in my book as well. So I think that's an interesting connection that allows us to understand sex better, why we should be studying asexuality.
Yeah, and that brings me to another question. Clearly, we as men have testicles that produce semen, and we got to blow our load. So I'm thinking, just because a man is asexual doesn't mean he never gets aroused and never ejaculates. How are the necessary, quote-unquote, emissions dealt with, and what are the circumstances when you're asexual?
Yeah, and that's a very important point. Not all asexual people, for example, have no sexual outlets, okay? They may, in fact, still masturbate. It's interesting. There's research that suggests that asexual people talk about masturbation in a slightly different way than average sexual people. So, for example, they may refer to masturbation as just a way of kind of cleaning out the plumbing, so to speak, as opposed to, oh, wow, this was such a lustful feeling that I had to, in fact, touch myself and masturbate and end up, for example, having that outlet that way. It's more utilitarian, oftentimes, from an asexual person's perspective.
Yeah, that's fascinating in and of itself, because there would be an absence of fantasy or pornographic images to drive that ejaculation. It would purely be my body told me I needed to do this and it had to happen, like a bodily function.
Yes, but I think that's part of the answer for asexual people. There's probably also the case that there might be some level in some asexual people of still having some level of fantasy, but there is still a kind of disconnection between themselves and others. So there's still, if you will, a lack of sexual attraction to others, even if there might be some level of fantasy that arouses their bodies. Even if, for example, it goes beyond utilitarian release, there might be some level of fantasy, some level of imagery, but there's still a disconnect between themselves and others. So from my perspective, there's still a lack of sexual attraction because they don't connect up, even in these fantasies, themselves with others. And therefore, there's still a lack of sexual attraction, a lack of sexual connection to other people, even if there's some level of fantasy. Or some asexual people may use pornography to some degree, but they use it in a different way than average, for example, let's say heterosexual guys.
Well, give me an example of how that would look.
Well, it would be that their bodies become aroused on some level to, for example, the sexual imagery. But in average typical fantasy that, let's say, average heterosexual, average gay people have, what they'll do is they'll project themselves onto characters having interaction with other people, for example, in porn. Whereas in asexual people, I'm not saying all asexual people do this, but some asexual people still, for example, may watch some porn, may have some sort of level of fantasy, but still what ends up happening is, for example, they don't project themselves onto, for example, oh, look at that beautiful woman. I'm interacting with her. I'm stroking her, touching her, projecting yourself at least on some level to, let's say, a male having sex with a female. So I know this is kind of technical, but there's still a disconnect between oneself and one's attractions and other people. Even if, for example, some asexual people do have some level of fantasy, and it's not necessarily just utilitarian in terms of release. So in some sense, that lack of sexual attraction that defines asexuality is still there, even if, for example, some asexual people have some level of fantasy and even, you know, masturbate to porn.
You know, Tony, if there's anything I figured out in this conversation, it's that there are no absolutes when it comes to this subject.
Yeah, I think so.
And indeed, under the umbrella of the ACE community are other various and sundry terms that I think we'd be remiss if we didn't cover, especially since I've got guys I coach who are waiting with bated breath for me to mention some of these.
Okay.
Because they're what they might be experiencing in their own lives.
Okay.
Terms such as gray sexual.
Yeah. You
know, talking about that gray area, there is a term that acknowledges a gray area, which is gray sexuality.
Yeah.
Demisexuality.
Yeah.
Even sapiosexuality. And the indication there is I experience sexual attraction sometimes and or under some circumstances.
Yes.
This is extra fascinating to me because in the experience of, say, a gray sexual person, that person may be pleasantly surprised that they feel sexual attraction towards a very certain kind of individual, a very narrow definition of what turns them on.
Yes.
Is present. Yes. And that seems fascinating.
Yeah.
Yeah. Can you comment on that one a little bit? Gray sexuality.
Yeah. My understanding, this is something that ACE people, particularly people who are interested in educating others, have used. So this gray A is a term that's used for people who don't fully identify as asexual, for example, a long-term enduring lack of sexual attraction for others versus, for example, sexual people who have basically, yeah, sexual attraction for others. So this gray A are the people who are kind of somewhere in between. And they may have under some circumstances, some level of sexual desire for others, but it's probably at a lower level than average typical friends and family who they, for example, have been interacting with for years. So they don't feel comfortable saying they're a fully sexual person, but they don't also feel comfortable saying that they're fully asexual. So the gray A kind of is basically what it sounds like. It's kind of in a gray area between asexuality and asexuality.
So would it be accurate to say that the person who succeeds, for lack of a better word, at turning on a gray A person would be the kind of person who, for someone who processes sexuality like roughly 99% of the rest of the population, would be that one person who comes along every once in a while who really does it for us? I mean, there's just an extra supercharge there that wakes it up.
Yeah, you know, I guess there's an analogy there that, let's say, people are predominantly heterosexual, but boy, oh boy, you know, a person of the same sex comes along who just happens to be, for some strange reason, kind of a little bit more gray and even somewhat turning them on, despite the fact that they're in fact the same sex. So an absolutely gorgeous person that may exhibit some level of femininity, let's say, and is absolutely gorgeous, if you're a heterosexual man, maybe it's like, wow, that person, you know, under some circumstances, you know.
If I were gay, I'd be gay with that person.
Yeah, kind of, maybe. I think that analogy makes some sense. I wouldn't suggest that it's perfect analogy, but
I haven't actually ever had that experience. I have never actually been turned on by a man ever. I mean, I can, as a dating coach, observe a guy and go, women are going to love that guy.
Okay.
Or vice versa. Or that's a handsome dude. Or
yeah,
that guy's not going to succeed with women. That guy will.
Yeah.
But I can think about this at the cognitive level and go, wow, okay, I can imagine where if that ever did happen to me and I felt sexual attraction for a guy, I'd have to kind of shake it off and go, wow, that was really surprising.
Right.
You know, and that's kind of how a gray sexual person would sort of process getting hit with this little lightning bolt of sexual attraction. Like, whoa, okay, that was interesting and different.
Yeah. Yeah. Again, as you suggested, maybe under other circumstances too, maybe the person is what might be termed, again, what you suggest, demisexual and fall within the sort of gray area and only, for example, be sexually attracted to an individual only if they've formed this absolute exquisite romantic bond with that individual and therefore have now started to feel, for example, some level of sexual attraction for that one individual because they've formed this exquisite romantic bond with this one person, perhaps.
Now, hold on. Demisexuality is very interesting to me because on the surface, it seems non-standard. But it also seems like what every woman says she wants out of a relationship, doesn't it? So if you're a demisexual guy, mm-hmm. and the actual sexual attraction follows the holistic connection with this person, feeling an emotional bond with them, wouldn't that tend to make a woman feel incredibly safe in such a relationship? I mean, this guy is hot for me because he loves me. I mean, that's the way every woman somewhat romantically envisions men processing sexual attraction for them, right? So, I mean, in a way, this would seem like the holy grail for a woman who wants a relationship. These guys should be all happily married, I would say.
Well, they might. I mean, there may be, you know, many.
I'm sorry, notwithstanding, you know, the woman being the right person to be married to, of course. Right. But, you know, you understand what I'm saying, the gist of it.
I do. So I would suggest, yeah, there's probably many women who would find a partner like that to be, a really hot choice and maybe an ideal in some sense. Maybe, you know, some men would also be very, very happy, you know, at least from a jealousy standpoint, to have a wife or a partner who's a woman who's demisexual and only completely attracted to him. And therefore, you know, in terms of jealousy, a guy would go, you know what, she's never, ever stray because the only sexual connection she has is to me. And that was something that's developed over the last 6 months or the last year.
Yeah, that seems like a win-win. I mean, it seems like there should be a dating site for demi people.
Maybe.
I mean, you know, the chances that they're going to have that spark with the very person they're matched with, you know, hit or miss. I imagine there's, again, some people left in the lurch in those circumstances. I mean, I'm a demisexual person, for example. I just absolutely build this bond with this other person, and that's not how they process things themselves. But then again, you know, if you've built that bond, there is a bond, and it takes two people to tango, right? Mm-hmm. Fascinating conversation. Mm-hmm. You know, I have had several guys in my practice who are really resonating with that idea of demisexuality. And they're finding sometimes that women don't trust it.
Really?
Like, you know, you're just some kind of player. Are you just telling me what I need to hear? Yeah. And then they kind of pursue that relationship a little bit and it starts going down the path of being more of a connection. And they realize, man, this guy was who he said he was.
Yeah.
This is how this guy processes things. And then there's that absence of any evidence otherwise in that context, which is always helpful.
Yeah.
Then you have, of course, the sapiosexual people, and that's almost a buzzword nowadays. It was unheard of 10 years ago. Well, you know, again, much of this area of study is wide open. So, of course, we hadn't heard the term sapiosexual until about a decade ago. But this is a person who is turned on by intellectual firepower, someone who loves intelligence and finds brainiac people sexy.
Mm-hmm.
That is another interesting way to trigger sexual attraction and or respond to it, right?
And most people definitely have some level of, you know, physical kinds of attraction associated with their lustful feelings, looking at people's bodies and so on and so forth. But it's certainly not unheard of that on average, we're also turned on by what people do and how they think and so on and so forth. This is a kind of an extreme version of that, but it's certainly not unheard of within the broader context of what turns on even average sexual people, particularly women who are, for example, a little bit more interested in how men behave, how they think, what they do versus, for example, their bodies per se.
Interesting. Interesting. I know this is going to be kind of like throwing blades of grass up into the wind and seeing which way the wind blows. I don't expect you to have a definitive answer here, but what percentage of the population would you say is perhaps represented by these more gray areas of asexuality, the gray A, the demis, the sapiotypes of people?
I would say perhaps another 0.5% or something like that.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay, I would think it's a little higher.
Yeah. I guess in a modern context, where people are happy to embrace more diversity, maybe I think where you're going is that maybe it's much higher than, let's say, another 0.5%. And maybe that's the case.
Well, I'll tell you what, you know, we're running out of time here. And this is such a fascinating conversation on a subject that clearly has more depth than I ever even realized. It's almost surprising to me that there's been so little research on it. But I guess when you have so relatively few people who are affected by something, it just doesn't get the research put into it. You know, like, for example, really rare disorders and diseases don't get nearly the money thrown at it and the research time put into it as, say, you know, childhood leukemia does, you know, for what are pretty obvious reasons. Yeah, I mean, man, we are leaving so much on the table here. We probably could do another whole show on it, probably an entire program on it. And I certainly applaud your work and am glad you're out there studying it, Tony, because not enough guys are. And I want to point guys to Amazon where they can grab a copy of your book, Understanding Asexuality. And I'm going to make it really simple. Just go to www.mountaintoppodcast.com/ace, A-C-E, and you'll be able to get Tony Bogart's book. And you can also see it right at the top of the list at the Amazon influencer page, which is mountaintoppodcast.com/Amazon. And it'll be there in perpetuity as part of that evergreen page of all the books by all of our guests ever. So, Tony, thanks a million. Such a fascinating conversation, and you're clearly so knowledgeable on it. And I just am thankful for your work, and I'm glad that you continue that work. It seems very, very valuable. Thank you.
Thanks for having me, Scott. I appreciate being on.
Yeah, man. And guys, if you haven't visited www.mountaintoppodcast.com, go ahead and go there. Get you some free reports. Go ahead and watch the YouTube version of these shows. Or if you find the need for it, you can also get transcripts of each and every episode from episode number 150 going forward. Also, if you've considered getting some coaching done with me and you're ready to start seeing the results with women in your life that you know you've deserved for a long time now, it's been a long time coming now, and you're ready to start getting the women in your life who you really want in your life, perhaps even that one great woman who's the woman for you, go ahead and click that button at the upper right-hand corner of mountaintoppodcast.com. Get on the phone with me and talk for 25 minutes, and let's see what the solution is for you that's the right solution. It's all there for you at www.mountaintoppodcast.com. And until I talk to you again real soon, this is Scott McKay from XMY Communications in San Antonio, Texas. Be good out there.
The Mountaintop Podcast is produced by X&Y Communications. All rights reserved worldwide. Be sure to visit www.mountaintoppodcast.com for show notes. And while you're there, sign up for the free X&Y Communications newsletter for men. This is Ed Roy Odom speaking for the Mountaintop Podcast.